Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing you down-to-earth conversation about the realities of our real-life experiences. From situations to situationships, we'll be discussing the challenges women face but don't talk about enough as we navigate this thing called life. I'm your host, Lizette McKenzie.
So today we are going to be talking about something that plagues so many women. I personally have not had the experience, but I know lots of women who have dealt with fibroids in their life. And as I hear, it is the devil. So I have Natira and Alicia on with me today. And they're going to share their experiences and talk a little bit about what goes on when you have fibroids.
Yeah.
Alicia?
All right. So my story really begins about 20 years ago when I started my menstrual cycle. So one thing I noticed fairly early on was that I had pretty heavy periods. Even as like a teenage girl, I was bleeding through pads at kind of a high rate. Maybe like I wear like a thick pad and it'd be absorbed in blood in 3 hours. I told my mom this because she noticed obviously that my clothes were stained. But she, you know, at the time, we didn't have that much information about fibroids and heavy periods. And she had just told me to be as vigilant as possible about changing my pads during the day. So I was. But of course, there are times when, you know, the day gets away from me. You don't have as much time to go back and forth to the bathroom. Well, I would just bleed through. Mm-hmm. But I just dealt with it because that was kind of the understood thing. There wasn't really a lot of talk in school about periods and how they affect you that much. You know, there was the typical sex ed where they said, you know, you get your period and this is what happens. But they don't really go into the details as far as what can happen when your period isn't quote unquote normal. So I really didn't have any implication that I might have had anything like fibroids until about 5-6 years ago. I had a doctor at the time who noticed that, you know, I had heavy periods. I told her that and I was anemic, and she was like, well, have you seen a gynecologist about this? Maybe a specialist, because I'm sure, you know, you qualify for some type of treatment. I was like, no. You know, I was kind of under the implication that my fibroids were somewhat normal. Mm-hmm. And, well, not normal, but my periods were somewhat normal. So, you know, I really didn't have any idea of, you know, what I needed to do. So I ended up taking her advice. I saw a gynecologist she recommended. And the gynecologist, I'm sure, had good intentions, but I didn't really feel like she listened to what I was saying, because I didn't really want to be on hormonal birth control. And because my mom had told me her experience, and I was like, I'm not sure. But at the time, she didn't really go through other options of treating fibroids like a myomectomy or ablation. She just said, you know, try the birth control. I'm sure you'll be okay. Fast forward a couple of weeks, I tried the birth control. I was miserable. Like, I was anxious. I was sweaty. I just couldn't cope. So I stopped taking the medicine, and I hate to say it, but I kind of just ghosted that doctor because I didn't feel like she really wanted to understand my perspective. Right. So I go to that doctor, but meanwhile, my doctor at the time also recommended a specialist, and this specialist was a hematologist. So he treated blood conditions and blood disorders, and his solution was for me to try iron infusions. And for those of you who don't know, an iron infusion is pretty much where you go and sit in a common area and they inject you with iron. The best analogy I have for it is like going to, if you've ever been with a family member who's had chemo, where they put the chemo in intravenously, it's like that, except they put the iron in you intravenously. They sit there, you sit there, they might give you a snack or whatnot. That's what happened to me. Yeah, so I had about two or three of those. But what I didn't know was how much it was. It was a few thousand dollars. And at the time, I had high deductible insurance. So my bill was pretty hefty. And by hefty, I mean I'm finally about to pay that bill off next month after almost 5 years. Yes. At that point, the iron infusion didn't take, and I was very frustrated because I had forked over a lot of money, and it didn't work. So I was like, okay. I ended up leaving that doctor, the hematologist, and then the primary doctor I left as well because of other issues, not just with the fibroid recommendations or whatnot. So finally, I found a new primary care and gynecologist in 2016, and my primary care doctor really told me to defer to the gynecologist with the fibroids. I was like, okay. But again, I got to the gynecologist, and she said again, we'll try this medicine. It wasn't birth control, but it was still was a medicine where the side effects weren't that great, and I couldn't do it. So finally, my mom happened to be looking on the internet, and she told me about a study that I possibly entered for fibroids. So I contacted the website for the study, and sure enough, I got into the study, and I have to say so far, that's the best treatment I've had for my fibroids. But with it being a study and the medicine being in testing stages, you can only be in the study so long. So I only was on that medication for about a year, but my periods were actually closer to normal, you would say. Like, I didn't have to worry about heavy bleeding and whatnot. So that was good, but of course the study ended. So after the study ended, I honestly didn't want to talk to my gynecologist again until I saw, you know, how the fibroids were going to change because of the study medication. So I want to say earlier this year, my fibroids, I noticed they didn't let up. So I finally saw my gynecologist this year, and she prescribed me low-dose birth control, low-estrin to be exact. But again, the side effects, I was only on it about 2 weeks, but the side effects nearly took me out because the night sweats, the elevated heart rate, weight, insomnia, like these are side effects that are considered fairly reasonable because the only side effect my doctor warned me about was I felt pain in my legs because that could be a sign of a blood clot. Right. Anything else was seen to be par for the course, but for me, if I couldn't sleep, I couldn't, you know, be as functional at work the next day. So again, so I had to make that executive decision and just go off of the medication. And I haven't talked to my doctor since I've done it, but I do go back to my doctor next month. So I'm interested to see what she says, but again, I'm going to have to be more vigilant about saying, I know hormonal birth control is not for me. I understand it seems like to be a common solution, but if I can't have a full and productive life on medication, I'd rather deal with the actual issue and just wait for a better solution. So we'll see, but I say all this to say that fibroids, I feel like, are unnecessarily stigmatized. It's not like a disease. It's not a disease I caught. It's actually very common. I believe 80% of women have a fibroid by the age of 50. Mm-hmm. And if you're an African-American woman, you're even more at risk for fibroids. Mm-hmm. And it turns out I have an aunt on each side of my family who have had fibroids, but I haven't talked to them about it because, again, there is that unconscious stigma of, well, this isn't something we should talk about, whereas I can talk to anybody in my family about diabetes, high blood pressure, any of those. But if you talk about anything related to the reproductive system, it's like, oh, no.
It's taboo.
It's taboo, and it shouldn't be, because this right. is your body. It's a natural part of life that stinks. Mm-hmm. But I really hope in us talking about this that more women are empowered to find the best solution for them and also not blindly trust your physician.
Right. And
so, Alicia, I have one question. Did you have any pain with your fibroids?
Pain? Yes. So I notice when I have my cycle, I do have a good bit of cramps, but I'm fortunate in the fact that I consider them fairly normal. Like if I take an Aleve during my cycle, I'm fairly okay during the day. Like I don't have pain to the extent of where, you know, the first 2 days of my cycle, I can't do anything. I'm very fortunate in that regard. But I will say there is a good amount of discomfort. So, yeah.
And how often do you have to get your fibroids monitored? I know some people, unexpectedly or maybe expectedly, their fibroids grow so large mm-hmm. that they have to have surgery to have them removed. So
right.
how often, typically, do they recommend?
I honestly don't know. I believe that varies from person to person, because I had an ultrasound recently for the first time, I want to say maybe a year and a half. But I do know there are other people who aren't as fortunate. In fact, I have a family friend who is due to give birth soon, and by soon I mean like right after Christmas, but she's had recurring fibroids for years, and the fibroids actually came back while she was pregnant, so they have to perform a C-section and then take the fibroids out. So in case, yeah, and she's someone I know who's had surgery before to get them removed, but they can grow back. So I think it depends on the severity and the size of your fibroids. But again, I'm fortunate mine are, I say mine are about the size of a large rock. So wow. they cause enough pain, but not to the point of where like, if I don't get surgery, it'll be detrimental, but still, it's enough to, you know, cause.
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah.
Rocks, my goodness.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the thing is, there's so many types of fibroids. I think it's like submucosal, that and the ones that can kind of get under your uterus, and then there's ones that attach to your fallopian tubes. So I think all of that varies. So it does help to have continual dialogue with your physician and at least go once a year and be like, hey, doc, this is what's going on.
But, so now for the treatment of fibroids, I know you said the birth control did not work for you. Is there anything else that that you can use that's out on the market?
Well, medicine-wise, other than birth control, there was that Lystetta that I mentioned, but I don't remember if that has hormones or not, but the side effects were enough to not encourage me to pursue that. But there are a number of surgeries. There's the myomectomy, which I think is the most common now, where they do a variety of incisions depending on how bad your fibroids are, and they just take out the fibroids. And then there's what they call UAE, uterine artery embolization, and that's just a fancy way of saying they use heat to actually go into your uterus and shrink the fibroids. And then I believe there's also an ablation, and I really should have written down what that one means, but then the most drastic choice is if you're having really bad problems with fibroids, hysterectomy, which they're trying to avoid, especially women who are still of childbearing, trying to avoid that one. Whether or not you want to have children, nobody wants to go into menopause any earlier than
they have to. Yeah, absolutely.
If you can't get any relief and your fibroids are so bad, I can see why some women would pursue a hysterectomy. And sadly, you know, the forums I've been on, I've seen where women say, well, just resigned myself to not having children because the fibroids are so bad, I have to have a hysterectomy. And that's right. A tough choice to make.
Right. Absolutely.
But again, if that's what works for you, you have to do it. But yeah, there are options. And again, I say you have to keep going back and forth with your doctor. So I think it's easy for a doctor to say, hey, take this medicine, it's going to work. But that's not always the case for
you. Or, you know, they say, let's take it out.
Yep.
I mean, that's been my journey.
So Natira, you had surgery to have your fibroids removed, right?
I did have surgery to have a fibroid removed. That was the size of a grapefruit.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know that I had a fibroid until I was trying to get pregnant.
Wow.
And my gynecologist did an ultrasound. He's like, you have a huge fibroid at the top of your uterus. And
wow.
This could be, and now I already was having heavy periods. I am a tampon and pad girl.
Together. Oh, wow. That's heavy.
Yeah.
Together.
Wow.
Like, there's no, like, not together. Like, you better use both or you're going to have a problem.
Wow.
And I've had painful periods forever. But my doctor suggested that we just remove that fibroid because it was so large.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my mother, she begged me not to do it. She said, don't do this. They shrink with age.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors don't tell you that, especially as African-American women.
Mm-hmm.
They will not tell you that your fibroids, if you have them, will shrink.
Wow.
They will shrink over time. They'll shrink. And so she said, you're doing this unnecessary surgery to have a baby when people have babies all the time and have fibroids. So
wow.
I went ahead and did it anyway. And they removed the fibroid, and my doctor said, oh, this will be, you know, a 2-3 day recovery. It's an in and out procedure. You can just come in and you'll be discharged that day. Huh. Hooey.
Wow.
I was in the hospital overnight for a day. It took me months, not 3 days. I went back to work because I'm thinking in 3 days I'm going to be fine.
Right.
In 3 days, like the doctor said. Oh, no, ma'am. It took me months. I can't even say months. I'm still dealing with that pain from that surgery.
So what kind of pain are you having? Is it cramps?
Cramping, not just on my period, outside of it.
Okay.
You feel the pain of the surgery. It's kind of like, I had a C-section too. So part of mine was scar tissue from the C-section.
Mm-hmm.
And the fibroid grew on the scar tissue. So that's why it was so large. It got to the size of a grapefruit.
Wow.
And they removed that and the scar tissue. The doctor said, you had a lot of scar tissue from your C-section. She said, but I've removed that. Everything should be great and grand. And I still have pains from that surgery, and two more grew in its place.
Oh, wow.
So after I took that out, I went back to the doctor. He's like, you have two more fibroids where that one was.
It grew back within how much time since after the surgery?
I've had that fibroid removed now about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe within the last couple of years,
Wow.
And so I asked my doctor, I was like, well, what are we going to do? He's like, just leave them. Because obviously you're a fibroidy person. You get these.
Wow.
So just leave it. It's going to shrink. Your body's going to change. I'm almost 44.
Mm-hmm.
You say your body's going to change anyway. You're going to go through that change anyway. Let's just watch them, monitor them, see how they are and what they do.
Right.
And how they do. For me, I did have it removed. I kind of regret having it removed because it caused more problems than it actually solved. And they came back.
Wow.
So I think, especially with any woman, you have to listen to your body. You have to take control of your situation and really, really, really do your research. Because I have aunts, they were like, heavy periods eat liver. It's that simple. That's what they did before there was a gynecologist. You know what I'm saying?
So before we were getting treated, it was homeopathic.
Yeah.
Gynecologist, what did they do before the doctor? So that is something that I could do, although I don't like liver. Which I enjoy it. To kind of help. And so for me, even with a lot of things regarding reproductive and women's issues, I always do my research. What did they do before the medicine?
Right.
Because somebody had a fibroid before 2019.
Yep.
Somebody was suffering in the 1800s with a fibroid. What did they do?
I can't imagine. I wonder, but I mean, back in that time, I don't think I would have wanted to be treated by anybody. They weren't numbing anything.
And it's funny, the things that you find out. For instance, did you know that oil of arate?
No, I did not know that.
Oil, you don't need diflucan, you don't need Monster 7, you don't need none of that stuff. Go to the health food store and buy you some oil of oregano pill. It's an oil, like olive oil, castor oil, black kochia's oil. It's an oil. You take it, yeast infection gone.
Really?
Yes, ma'am. And if you don't believe me, Google it, look it up for yourself.
That's going to be a next topic because I know a lot of women suffer from yeast a lot. They get reoccurring yeast infections.
Oh, yeah.
And they're taking antibiotics. The antibiotics, of course, causes more yeast. Yeah. Wow, I never knew that.
And yeah, oil, now with the
oregano.
Yeah, and now with the rise of drug-resistant superbugs, I'm kind of leery about taking antibiotics.
Yeah, but it's like with anything. You take the flu shot, and then after you take it, they say, oh, well, the flu shot isn't strong enough for this strain of flu. So I think technology, as wonderful as it is not or cannot guarantee that we will always be healed and safe.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like it's a drink of the straw.
You're going to have gas, bloating, you might die, your heart might stop.
Yes.
You're not going to be well.
You won't bleed from the fibroid, you're not going to bleed from the fibroid, but there is a chance that you'll have bleeding from your ears. It's crazy. You know, you have to weigh your options of, what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to deal with in order to heal this one issue? And some people are opting to just deal with that issue.
So for me, now that I have two more, I'm like, well, you know, this is just my, one of my plots. And this is one of the cards I have, and I have to deal with
it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and it's unfortunate. Sometimes I'll be like, just take it all out, and I ain't got to deal with none of this stuff. And then I solve a lot of problems. But then I think about the pain I went through with that.
Right.
And I think about the pain my mother went through with her hysterectomy. I'm like, you're going to be down, girl. Mm-hmm. You're going to be down, girl, down. You know, and I'm not in a place right now to be down, laying in a bed. I got things to do.
Absolutely.
So I've decided to just deal with this particular issue. But for me, especially medically, I always want to know, well, what did they do before the big pharmaceutical company?
Right. And so
this issue didn't just pop on the scene today. What did people do?
Right.
And that's so when you talk about hormonals and there's things that you could do, and we just don't talk about it enough as women. What do you take when you hormonal? What do you take when you're going through the change? What do you, there's things out there here that are homeopathic that does not require you taking a pill or medication to help your condition. And we just don't do enough research into it because we trust the doctor.
The doctors, yeah.
The doctor has the answer because they went to school. And, well, that doctor could have had a D. He ain't going to tell you. He said I mean, you know, they just practice it. This is a practice. We sometimes we get it right and sometimes we don't.
Absolutely.
Everybody is different. So to me, I'm more leery of the doctors who their first thing is to cut or their first thing is to medicate. I want them to talk to me about my health. What am I doing? What have I researched? What do they think I should do? I'm more interested in those type of doctors. And fortunately, I have a very good gynecologist that talks to me about me. And not try to do a one-size-fit-all approach on everybody. He said, we already took that fibroid out. Why are we going back in there to do what?
Right.
Obviously, you have to.
And that's something else for women, for those that are listening, dealing with your doctor. Because like you said, Alicia, the first two doctors you had, you felt like they just weren't listening to you. What would you say to women who they're going to the doctor, they're following these doctors' instructions, but they still feel like something is missing, you know, they're not being heard? What do you recommend to them?
I say, well, one thing I say is get a second opinion. The second thing I say is start talking to people. Like Natira said, we don't talk about this enough. And one thing that is kind of positive as a result of me dealing with my fibroids, I have been more, I guess you could say, open in talking about it with people. I don't talk about it with everyone I know, obviously, and I want to talk about it with a coworker. But if someone says, well, I have heavy periods or something along those lines, I'll say, okay, you know, I have fibroids, and then we'll kind of get into a discussion. But why I say get a second opinion is because my mom is a 2-time breast cancer survivor. And the first time she got it, this was early 2000s, she was stage 1 diagnosed. And the doctor recommended a lumpectomy, and my mom, she didn't really do that much research. I think at that point she's really scared, and she just wanted to, you know, get it taken care of. She got the lumpectomy, and next thing you know, 2 years later, it came back. And she, you know, the doctor said, well, get a mastectomy, it'll be fine. My mom's like, no, I'm getting a second opinion. So my mom drove 2 hours from where we live, Wilmington. She came to UNC hospitals and got a second opinion. And sure enough, the UNC doctor was like, yeah, you do need a mastectomy if you want to beat this. And that's what she did. Wow. But, you know, that time around, she did more research. She did consult with someone she knew about, you know, the process and things of that nature. Right. So that's kind of informed my experience with fibroids. So, like, now I've found a forum on Reddit where there are women who've shared what they've gone through. Mm-hmm. And it varies. Some women have stuck with same doctors. Some women have switched doctors. Some women have changed their diets. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the results vary. But as far as consulting with a doctor, if the doctor is not listening to you, then you have to move on. It's just like any other relationship. If you don't feel heard, or if you don't feel valued, then you have to pursue other avenues. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I'm in an area with a lot of great healthcare options. Right. So if I feel like my doctor this time isn't listening or, you know, willing to talk with me instead of just throwing the medicine at me, I am going to pursue other physicians' opinions because I don't feel like it's worth my time or her time to just us trying to do a different version of the same thing and me not being miserable and her, I guess in my doctor's case, not seeing a patient improve. So those are my two things. Get second opinion and talk to someone.
Yeah, and I think that definitely talking to someone, I mean, like we said earlier, when it comes to reproductive health and sometimes when it comes to women's health in general, it's such, everything about it is so taboo.
Yeah.
And we women suffer in silence. We are known to suffer in silence and we have to stop. We have to stop being afraid to speak up about what's going on with us. Mm-hmm. Stop being afraid to have conversations that can potentially help someone else deal with something that they're going through. You know, somebody has to be that opening door to invite mm-hmm. conversations. And that's the whole reason why I created that group, because I, you know, in talking with different people, I find that there's so many things that women have in common, but because of the stigmas and mm-hmm. the fears, it goes unsaid. Mm-hmm. So then they feel like they're alone, and really they're not alone. They have so much company and such good company.
Yeah.
That we need to kind of start breaking down that wall and building these bridges where we feel comfortable speaking up about what's going on with us, because it's natural. It's what's happening. You know, we need to talk about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good grief. We go through a lot.
And I do want to say, like, we haven't mentioned it yet, but I have read that diet can affect how your fibroids grow. So, you know, the past year or so, I've kind of changed my diet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just all. But I do think that's played a role in my fibroids not being as bad as when I was initially. And to anyone listening, to go online and see what you can find about diet and fibroids, because I have seen various articles saying, well, if you cut down on red meat, that helps. If you increase your intake of vegetables, that helps. There are also certain supplements that you can take that help. And it varies from person to person. It's not going to work for everyone.
Right.
And instead of being so reliant on westernized medicine and doctors, it is good to know that there are other options we can
yeah and mainly really definitely go get checked. I mean, yeah. I think we go to the regular exam and get the, you know, the regular swab, but sometimes you do need an ultrasound. Mm-hmm. That should be part of your regular regimen, just to make sure everything is in its proper place and that there aren't anything else going on that you can't see with the swab.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Instead of waiting, you know, sometimes people wait until a problem really presents when it may already be there, but it's not as serious. and it could have been dealt with sooner so that the actual procedure or the process is not so intense.
Right.
So, yep, it definitely helps to research what's going on. Now, that's not to say, you know, people are quick to Google. And, you know, I can remember times when I had things wrong with me and I would Google. And I think I said this to you before, Alicia, that by the time I was finished, I had diagnosed myself with mad cow's disease. And, you know, it's not always correct.
By the time you finish with Google, you died three times.
Yes.
We gotta be careful with consulting Dr. Google.
Yes.
That's just like back in the day, I don't know if y'all remember with the Robitussin commercial recommended by Dr. Mom.
Yes.
And my mom, she tried to be smart and say she was Dr. Mom. So in that case, you give me the wrong medicine. She knows this. We joke about this all the time. But seriously, though, like Dr. Google can mess you all the way up. You
can
put in a few symptoms, and next thing you know, you have a variety of issues from anxiety, pain addiction, the flu. So yeah, you got to be careful.
You got to use discretion.
And don't own everything that people say at first.
Right.
I mean, I don't receive everything just because that's what you said. That doesn't make that the truth.
Absolutely.
Let's do some further investigation to see if what you are saying is actually the truth in my case.
Absolutely.
So for me, you know, just because the doctor said, don't make it so.
Yep, that's so right. That is so true.
That is so true.
I do want to add, we need to talk about family history more. Because that had I known I had two aunts with fibroids, I think I would have been a bit more forward with just asking them what their experience was. Because I know both of them wouldn't have minded me asking. It's not like I'm trying to get a whole history of what they've gone through. I just want an idea of what might have worked for them, if anything. And it's also good to know other things that could contribute to fibroids in your family. If you have a family member, your mom or aunt or sister has heavy periods, that's the information you need to know. If you know a family member with iron deficiency, that's something you need to know. So I think we need to
be more open about all of it. We don't talk about mental health issues. We don't talk about, you know, your grandfather was a little, you know, just a little off. No, he was all the way off. They tell you that he was all the way to the left. He had a name for his condition. He needed to stop sugarcoating stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and say what it is so that we can get the proper help that we need, especially for our boys, for our young girls, for ourselves, for everybody. We don't really talk as a community about the things that are plaguing our families. Diabetes, high blood pressure, strokes.
Absolutely.
Those kind of things. Nobody wants to talk about, you know, these things, but it's important. So I'm with you.
Very important.
More transparent.
Yep.
I agree, ladies. This was a wonderful, wonderful discussion. And before we wrap it up, does anybody have any final words or anything else that is very important that needs to be said?
Well, I want to say one thing, Lizette. You are looking smoking, girl. You look good.
I couldn't put the video up last time because...
oh, my goodness, yes.
Hallelujah. I look like I was holding the door open with a cup asking for change last time, but I'm okay.
No, you didn't look that bad, but you're looking good now. That's all I'm saying, girl. Had to get that in there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, ladies, so much for having this discussion. I hope that there's someone that can use this information and hearing it, if they have their own questions, they either reach out in the group. I'm sure there are other women in the group who've experienced this, but just to have that moral support that can usher them into having the conversations with the people that they need to talk to. So we can keep this discussion going on Facebook at Between a Talk and a Hard Place. Share your experiences there, connect with people in the group. And until next time, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's.